Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Good morning, Carolinas. Welcome to Carolina Focus, our public affairs show on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Mix 107.9 and 92.7 Sports Radio WFNZ. Also available as a podcast, go to WBT.com. We're your co-hosts, along with Sharon Thorsland. I'm Ed Billick, and let's get started. Sharon recently caught up with Mike Hill, director of athletics for the Charlotte 49ers. He talks about moving to the new conference, women's lacrosse, and the upgrades to many of the facilities there on campus. Take it away, Sharon.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us here on Carolina Focus. I'm Sharon Thorsland. Well, if you've been paying attention to the news over the past few months, you have heard that there is a lot going on with the Charlotte 49ers athletic program. They're joining a new conference. They've added women's lacrosse. And, oh, yeah, they're expanding the football stadium. So that and a whole lot more happening just up the road at Charlotte 49ers. So now joining me now to give us all the details on all of this and much more is 49ers Director of Athletics, Mike Hill. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, obviously, we have tons to talk about here with everything that's going on up there. So if I just want to sort of run through it all, if I could, and you just sort of give us an update on things. Starting with this new grand master plan, the Evergreen Athletics Facilities Master Vision. Can you, first of all, tell me, where did that name come from? What is the significance of that?
Well, you know, when we first set out to do an assessment of all of our facilities, you know, we knew that we needed to develop basically a roadmap for the future, for the next, you know, 12 to 15 years. And it's an aspirational vision for what we believe, you know, we are going to become here. And so in sort of developing a name for this, you know, we call it very specifically a vision, a plan, right? Because while there it is a plan in theory, it really is more of a grander vision of what we intend to become. And so, you know, and then the Evergreen name was something that we thought was really appropriate because obviously our colors here, our school colors are green and white with a splash of gold. And that, you know, Evergreen in a way, you know, sort of illustrates, you know, what we're trying to deliver here. And that is a way to make sure that our program and our institution continues to stay relevant and fresh and on the cutting edge, right? And so that was really the intention of coming up with that name.
Okay. Well, I know that one of the catchier things going on with this master vision is the expansion of the football stadium. I know that's very exciting for everybody. So many fans out there who want to be able to attend games in football on football Saturdays. So tell us about what's going on with that renovation first and that expansion.
Well, you know, the stadium is a beautiful facility, built just about 10 years ago. You know, it was built at the time when football was started here. Football was going to be played at a lower level, at FCS level, right? And so, it was built with a capacity of a little over 15,000, which is a great capacity for that level of football. But conference realignment occurred at that time, and suddenly we found our program thrust into the higher level of football, FBS, Football Bowl Subdivision. And with that, of course, was a great opportunity, but also suddenly we recognized that our facility, you know, long-term was not going to have the capacity that it needed to accommodate larger crowds for bigger games, more high-profile opponents, et cetera. So wisely, the facility at that point was designed and built to be expanded for the future. So you see these wide open concourses when you come to the stadium now, and you can pretty clearly envision what the facility will look like if we just go up. And so what this facility master vision contemplates is an expansion ultimately to 30,600 seats.
Wow.
We would love to get done when we're able to tackle all of our phase one projects in the vision, but we actually have broken down the football project into two phases within that first groupings or priorities, depending on the capital and the cost that we raise and the cost. Because as you know, in today's world, costs are escalating in an astronomical way, rate. And so we do have a phase that would get us to about 21,000 seats, which is includes a tower with club level seats, suites, and also general fan seating. And then on the opposite side, on the east side, where our current student section is, above that student section, there would be an upper deck that would be added. So in total, that would get us to 21,000 and change. And then if we are able to go ahead and get all the way to 30,600 in this phase one of our project, then we would do that. And that would add more seats on that upper deck level, that second level, almost creating a bowl-like effect to the facility. But whether we end up initially going to 21 or we go the full throttle of 30,000 seats, it's going to be a major expansion of the stadium, and it'll change the look and feel for sure. And frankly, you know, we're at a point where we need that. We played six home games last year, and we were at or near capacity for all six of those games. And now we're going to be playing even more high-profile opponents and rivals. You know, we're in a conference we're moving into that has East Carolina. We'll be playing every other year in Charlotte. The Naval Academy, Navy, is a huge draw nationally. We've got some unbelievable non-conference games. We have the Tar Heels coming here to play us in Charlotte. We have NC State. We have Ole Miss from the SEC coming to play us here. And then we have a long-term series with Appalachian State. So, you know, we're going to need more seats, and that's a great thing for our program and is the logical next step in the growth and evolution of Charlotte 49ers football.
What is the timeline in just with this expansion, and when do you hope to get either phase one or potentially the entire thing done?
So, you know, so much of it is going to be predicated, of course, on raising the capital, right? And so the football project, if we go to the full 30,000, is currently estimated about 81 million out of our total number of 102 million in phase one projects. So, you know, it's going to be contingent on when we raise that money. And once we do, once we have the funding in place, then you're looking at about a 2 to 2.5 year process to actually construct the facility and get us to where we can occupy the facility safely with our fans. So, I mean, I think in a perfect world, you know, we're joining the American Athletic Conference in 23. And so the fall of 23 is our first season of competition in football. You know, I think within, you know, a couple, 3 years of that inaugural season in the American, we would love to have the stadium ready to go at that bigger level. But again, a lot of it will be contingent on funding sources and what we can raise.
Will you be able to play in the stadium while this construction is going on, or will you have to relocate?
That's a great question. It's not clear at this point. I think that it's conceivable that some parts of the project could be ongoing during the course of a year, but the likely solution is for us to maybe relocate for one football season and home games in another facility in Charlotte. So that remains to be seen. We would have to identify that location, negotiate that. But, you know, look, if we have to do that for 1 year to get our facility to where it needs to be, we certainly have some great options in the city of Charlotte.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know that the expansion is just one portion of this overhaul of the football facility, and also the locker room getting done. I see that there's going to be a new softball clubhouse, a new soccer and lacrosse stadium. Of course, we haven't even touched on lacrosse yet. But what about those clubhouses and locker rooms and things like that for the other sports besides football?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we did in developing our list of priorities was to establish, you know, sort of what our litmus test was as to whether a project should go into that first phase or not. Because quite frankly, you know, we developed plans for every single one of our campus athletic facilities. Okay. The facility that we do not have on our own campus is our, where we play golf at Rocky River. But every athletic facility on our campus, we developed a plan for. But you can't do it all at once, right? They can't go into phase one. If they're all priorities, you have no priorities. And so that's tough, I think, philosophically for us, because we value in a high level the performance of all of our teams and all of our sports. But what we used as sort of a barometer was whether or not it directly impacted our ability to compete at a high level in the new conference, the American Athletic Conference, and whether or not it impacted the addition of our new sport, women's lacrosse, which we just recently announced the last few weeks. And so you see those projects in place. A soccer lacrosse stadium would be where both of our soccer teams and lacrosse, women's lacrosse, would compete. Soccer is played in the fall, lacrosse in the spring. And so we would build a stadium that would be able to accommodate all three of those sports. You know, our soccer teams currently play at the Belt Track and Field, Transamerica Field, and it's a great facility for sure. But, you know, because there is a track there around the field, the fans are farther back from the field, and so it's hard for them to be as engaged and impactful on the game itself. And in soccer, you love to have the fans as close to the field as possible, and that would be true as well for lacrosse. Lacrosse, in the interim, will play its games in the football stadium. So okay. Lacrosse, which would be great to have lacrosse in the spring. We've talked to Coach Healy about that, and he's been super supportive of having lacrosse compete there, you know, while we're working around spring football practice. And then some of the other facilities that we have include a softball clubhouse that you mentioned. Softball, we're moving softball out of our existing field house, and our ultimate goal is to also move our baseball team out of our existing field house and build them a clubhouse as well on their right on their baseball stadium site. They currently cross the street from their field house to get to their facility. But the reason for that is that we would like to vacate space in the field house to accommodate our new lacrosse team. So lacrosse is a big Jenga puzzle, right? So lacrosse would move into the space in the field house that's been vacated. Meanwhile, we'll build new facilities for baseball and for softball across the way. And then we also plan to expand or enhance our locker rooms for both men's and women's basketball, really to get them sort of, you know, into 2022. The spaces are adequate, but adequate's not gold standard, which is what we like to promote around here and to be the best we could possibly be as we try to recruit high caliber athletes and accommodate the young men and women who compete in our program. So look, it's a lot, you know, in phase one. I mean, it's again, $102 million worth of projects. We've got a lot of work to do, but we're, you know, you have to believe it to achieve it is our philosophy around here. And we're excited about where we're headed.
Wow. That's very ambitious. And you said that's just phase one. How many phases are there to this entire vision?
So, you know, beyond that, we have not prioritized any more of the projects within the vision, except to demonstrate what they could look like. And we do not have dollars assigned to those projects either, because frankly, it would be irrelevant, right? Because, you know, if you tackle those projects down the road, you don't know what those construction costs and design costs are going to be in 2022. So I think a lot of it will depend beyond phase one. What's next in phase two? The priorities, I think, could be influenced again by, you know, our competition level in the American. What's most going to impact sports like basketball, for example, some of those projects. And again, funding sources. You know, sometimes when you put a vision like this out into the public, and you have prospective donors who see a project, and it may be a sport that they really care a lot about. And that could accelerate a project because they want to give to X project. And we've got the funding source so we can go ahead and move forward and do that. So I imagine there'll be probably at least another couple of phases in the master vision after we complete phase one. But again, that's really more to be determined once we finish this first phase.
Okay. We're speaking with Mike Hill, the director of athletics for the Charlotte 49ers. He's telling us all about the exciting things going on with the Niners athletic program. Mike, tell us about now, is there a capital campaign or fundraising campaign going on now simultaneously to try to get everything rolling?
Sure. So, you know, fundraising has begun, certainly. And we've made a lot of ground so far, covered a lot of ground. And at some point here in the near future, you know, we look forward to announcing specifics related to a campaign. But look, you're fundraising year round all the time in athletics and on university campuses, right? And so these are some things. For example, you know, the football locker room renovated here recently, you know, was already funded from a gift that we received about 18 months ago. We've had already secured some major gifts for the softball project. So many of these projects have already been funded or are in the process of being constructed and designed now. And the big number, of course, is that football expansion. You know, $81 million is a serious number. So we've got some work to do. But we have a lot of optimism. We're in a city that has tremendous resources, and we're going to need the city of Charlotte to get behind us and be behind this program. You know, athletics is certainly the most visible part of a university, right or wrong. It's the front porch to a university. And the exposure and visibility that athletics is going to receive on ESPN and on national telecasts as a part of our move to the American Athletic Conference really elevates the profile of our institution. And that's important to this university. And so we're really proud of the fact that this university is the fastest growing university in the state system. We're proud of the fact that we've had record freshman classes for the last 3 years, even in the middle of a pandemic. You know, the fact we've got 75,000 alumni that live in the Charlotte metro area. There are 49ers everywhere. You see them when you go out into the business community, you know. And so this university is making a huge impact. We're also, as an institution, one of the most diverse institutions in the state system. We have awarded the second highest number of degrees to Black students in the state, behind, I believe, maybe North Carolina A&T, which is an impressive number. We have the largest number of Latino students in the state system at our university. And we have almost 40% of our students are first generation college students. So you talk about upward mobility, which is a huge issue in this city and this market. This university is making an impact in that in ways that no other institution is. And so what athletics can do is help us tell that story and impact our university in a really positive light. So we're thankful to have the support of our chancellor, of our board, of our university, to allow us to be able to help elevate the institution as a whole through athletics.
Absolutely. And now you're adding lacrosse, women's lacrosse. What prompted that? Why did you choose women's lacrosse? And how is that going to play out over the next few years?
We're so excited about the addition of women's lacrosse. It's the fastest growing sport in the nation and one of the fastest growing, particularly in the Southeast. We're looking for opportunities to provide more competitive opportunities for young women. So this is a chance to add a women's sport. We're thrilled, particularly to announce it in the year of the 50th anniversary of Title IX. This is an expansion of opportunities here on our campus that we're thrilled about. Again, Charlotte is a hotbed for girls lacrosse, and the state and the region have really seen explosive growth in the sport. And nationally, as I mentioned, in the NCAA level, incredible growth. So we identified this as the best sport to add at Charlotte for the reasons that I just alluded to, but also, quite frankly, because, you know, we did not want to just add a sport to say we added a sport. We wanted to add a sport that we feel we can be competitive in at a championship level. And we believe in competing at a championship level in all of our sports. And lacrosse is a sport that we feel we can do that in. The American Athletic Conference that we'll be joining next year sponsors women's lacrosse. So it is a very, very good women's lacrosse league. So we'll have our hands full as we find our footing initially. But, you know, the fact that we were able to attract such an outstanding head coach, Claire Short, who we hired from Queens, you know, she built a national power at the Division II level at Queens. They've been to 3 straight Final Fours. They played for the national championship last year. And then this past season, they were 21-1. Their first loss of the year was in the national semifinals. They were ranked number one going into the tournament. So, you know, just a remarkable job that Claire did. And now she's going to come here just a few miles away and put her fingerprints all over this program and build something special here. So we're really excited about the addition of women's lacrosse.
Wow. Now, when is this going to happen? When are they going to start competing?
So, you know, we hired Claire now, even though we're not going to compete for 2 years. And the reason for that is we wanted to give her and her staff an opportunity to recruit. And because, you know, first recruiting class is really critical. And we wanted to give her a chance to really help build the program and shape the program as she sees fit. And so she's on board now and in doing exactly that, you know, going to be recruiting over the next month, month and a half. This is a really important recruiting period in the sport of lacrosse this time of year. But our first season of competition will be during the 24-25 academic year. So in the spring of 25 is when we'll play, you know, our first official matches as members of the American.
Wow. Now that you've touched on it a few times now, that is the other huge news that we obviously have to talk about here is the move to the American Athletic Conference. And that's a huge leap for the Charlotte 49ers. What was behind that move? Why do you feel like now is the time to make a move to a new conference?
Well, you know, it makes so much sense if you look at, first of all, the makeup of the league. Almost every institution in the American is an urban-based institution. Okay, so SMU in Dallas, USF in Tampa, Temple in Philadelphia, Tulane in New Orleans, Tulsa, you know, some of the schools that are coming on board with us from Conference USA. Actually, the only school that's not an urban-based university in the league is East Carolina. And we're thrilled to be in a league with ECU. What a great athletic program and university. It's awesome to have an in-state rival for us now in our conference, which we did not have in Conference USA. So we're thrilled about that. And ECU has a tremendous alumni and fan base in Charlotte. So it's going to be, I think, a great rivalry and a great opportunity there. So all of those things resonated with us. It's also very much a higher profile conference. Frankly, you know, if you look at there are 10 football playing conferences at the FBS level. And so you have five that are considered what's called the Power Five. That's the ACC, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, and Big 10. And then the group of five, okay? And the American Athletic Conference is widely regarded as the best of the group of five conferences. And in some circles, considered to be almost the sixth of the, if you had a Power Six. And so, you know, the competition steps up, the visibility steps up. They have a massive television contract with ESPN so that, you know, all of our games will be on some platform of ESPN, whether it's ABC, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, or ESPN+. So the visibility for our programs is tremendous. We'll see some increased revenues over time as we stair-step our way into the league financially. It made all the sense in the world. Now, it is a leap for us for a program that has only been playing football for 9 years. You know, it's really a remarkable achievement, frankly, that we were invited to join the conference after just 9 years. But the league told us they saw that we were already achieving our potential and that they are excited about the trajectory of our athletic program, of our university, and our amazing city. And all of those factored into their selection of us to join this prestigious league. So we're thrilled about it.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge move. A huge move. You touched on the East Carolina rivalry. That's something, like you said, that the 49ers have not had for years to be able to have an in-state rival, which, you know, when you look at the other conferences, you know, with the NC State, Carolina, whatever it may be.
Regional rivalries are what make college sports so special. And I think for us, I mean, if you look at some other conferences like the ACC and the SEC and the Big Ten, they were built on regional rivalries. And now we have an opportunity to build our own with ECU. And we're so grateful for that opportunity and have so much respect for them and the job that they've done in building the program that they have. They've been playing football a lot longer than we have, but we're chasing them, you know, for sure. We're trying to grow up fast after just 9 years of competition. You know, and so, yeah, we're super excited about that. And we're going to continue to look to try to build regional rivalries as we can. I mentioned we've got a long-term series scheduled with Appalachian State. That's another one that, you know, when they come here, it's full. And when we go up to Boone, their stadium is full. And the same is going to be the case when we play ECU. And so we're really excited about, you know, stoking those rivalries. But having an in-conference, in-state rival is a really big deal.
Now, I know that some of the other schools that are coming, in fact, I think almost all of them, except maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think, yeah, the rest of them, everybody else is coming with you from Conference USA, the other schools that are also entering the AAC at the same time. Is that sort of cool, too, that because you've already got some, you know, some history with them, some rivalries with these other schools like Florida Atlantic, North Texas, Rice. Is it sort of cool to have them come into the new conference at the same time with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, hey, these are great institutions, great programs, and we definitely have a history with them. You know, we think that this is going to comprise an outstanding conference. Mike Oresko, as the commissioner, has done a fantastic job. He and his staff and those schools have done a great job building this league into the premier group of five league in the country. And it's our job now not to just show up, but to be competitive and to validate their selection of us. And we are very focused and very driven to do that, to exceed expectations, because, you know, we're tired about talking about potential around here. It's time that we realize that potential, and we are starting to do that. We won a school record 5 conference championships this year, beating out last year's record of 4 conference championships. You know, we're on the right trajectory for sure as an athletics program, but we've still got a lot of work to do. We're nowhere near where we want to be, and the competition just got tougher. So, but we look forward to it. It's a challenge that we all relish, and we're really excited about it.
Now, this move is going to officially take place July 1st of 2023. Did the move to the new conference, does that sort of tie in with this whole athletics master plan and with the facilities improvement? Did that sort of go hand in hand with making this move and saying, oh, we need to upgrade at the same time?
You know, so I would say it was somewhat serendipitous that it played out the way that it did. You know, we actually initiated this planning process in the fall, late fall of 2018, my first year here. And, you know, you get a lot of different inputs from user groups, student athletes, coaches, staff, fans, et cetera. And we developed the plan. We hired a couple of architects to work with us, Jenkins Peer locally and HOK out of Kansas City. And by the spring of 20, we were hopeful that we were going to be ready to go to release the plan then, the vision at that time. And then the pandemic hit. And so we shelved it because it frankly didn't feel right going public with a plan to talk about a bunch of new facilities when everyone was trying to figure out what the heck the world was going to look like, you know. And so we shelved it. And you know, we waited a little over a year to dust it off. And when we did so, there were a few things that we decided to tweak in the vision before we released it publicly. So, the timing was, I think, ironic and certainly helpful, for sure. I can tell you that it was great to have that plan for us to be able to share it with the American during their vetting process of us. So we were prepared and we could demonstrate to them. For example, they asked us about the size of our football stadium. That was potentially a problem for us. So we were able to answer that, right? And say, no, here's our plan. This is what our intention is. And so that was really, I think, helpful in that process as they assessed us as a candidate. So, we're thrilled that we're able to announce it and release it, so close to the announcement of when we're officially joining the American. And I think it provides us with a lot of momentum and a lot of excitement around our program.
Absolutely. Already so much excitement. You unveiled a new logo not too long ago. Now you've got all these athletic facilities improvements, the move to the new conference, the adding women's lacrosse. So much going on. You have a quote that I loved in the press release that was announcing the plan, saying this is a vision of what we intend to become. And I think that's such a great way to sort of wrap up in a nutshell what you're trying to accomplish there. Y'all have just, you personally, I feel, have just done such a great job in leading this athletic program down this trajectory, this road. And I love that quote. And I just think that's a really neat way to say what you're trying to accomplish there with the Niners athletics program.
Well, I appreciate that. We're really proud of our university, and we're really proud of our athletics program. We're really proud of our city. I can tell you that, you know, personally, this has been just a joyful experience to be a part of this place, having joined Niner Nation 4 years ago. There's a lot of passion, a lot of pride, and it's been very rewarding for not just for me, but for our staff. And so, you know, again, we've still got a lot of work to do, but I believe very firmly that you have to sort of lay out what your vision is, what you intend to become. And that's exactly what this facility master vision is. But I think it's not just demonstrated in the facility master vision, but also in our other actions. And actions speak louder than words. And the fact that we were, you know, invited to and accepted the invitation to join the American speaks volumes about what other people see in us and how they view our program and how they view our university, the improvement of our sports across the board competitively. You know, without a doubt, we continue to win more conference championships and elevate the expectation level. You know, just as an example, I was talking with football the other day about this. You know, our fans were disappointed because we didn't make a bowl game last year. So were our coaches and our staff. But you know what? That's progress. When we're disappointed, we didn't make a bowl game. You know, when I got here 4 years ago, we won one football game the year before. You know, so that's where we are now. And that's a part of growth is getting your program to a point where you expect to be competing for championships. And that is our expectation here at Charlotte.
Wow. Well, Mike, thank you so much for sitting down with me today and telling us all about these exciting things that are going on up there with the 49ers. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much, Sharon. It was a pleasure, and go Niners.
Everybody stay with us. We've got
good
a lot
morning,
more
coming
up here
back
on Carolina
Focus.
Focus.
You're listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110-99.3 WBT, Mix 107.9 and 92.7 Sports Radio FNC. Always available as a podcast. You know, Carolina Focus is your public affairs show. It's a combination of original interviews and choice encore segments from this past week. Along with Sharon Thorsland, I'm Ed Billick. Ran into a news flash this week from Atrium Health, from the Levine Cancer Institute, a new therapy for patients with large B-cell lymphoma. This new therapy has been approved by the FDA just here recently on June 24th. Let's listen to Dr. Nijan Ghosh at the Levine Cancer Institute right here on Carolina Focus.
Doctor, if you want to just start off by explaining, what is this breaking news? What's this good news, doctor?
So we are going to talk about CAR T-cell therapy, and CAR T-cell therapy is a form of immunotherapy and gene therapy where patients' T lymphocytes, which are a type of white blood cell, are collected from the blood, and these cells then undergo some genetic modification to introduce something called a chimeric antigen receptor, or CAR, to allow these cells, these immune cells, to then recognize cancer cells, in this case, lymphoma cancer cells, and kill them. So it's basically harnessing a patient's own immune system and sort of targeting them towards the cancer to kill the cancer. And that's just that's a very important development in blood cancers, especially in lymphoma. And so recently, there has been a new FDA approval towards the end of June. This is the new news, I guess. This was on June 24th, where the FDA approved a type of CAR T-cell therapy called liso-cel, also known as Breyanzi, for patients with large B-cell lymphoma who have failed frontline treatment. And so here, patients could have either been refractory to frontline treatment, meaning the frontline treatment didn't work, or they relapsed after the frontline treatment. And it was also for patients who had, because of either age or comorbidities, if they were not considered as standard transplant candidates, they would have also been approved for this treatment with liso-cel.
It sounds to be a very effective method, and it's amazing. Miracles of modern medicine. What's the success rate so far in clinical trials?
Yeah, so interesting you asked that. We participated in this clinical trial called the pilot study, which led to the approval for liso-cel in patients who are not eligible for transplant because of age or comorbidities. And in this patient population, almost 80% of patients were above the age of 70. We saw an overall response rate of 80% with a complete response rate of 54%. And we also noted that patients who had got complete responses, those were very durable responses. In addition, the toxicity was very manageable. And despite patients with age and comorbidities, we did not see any new safety signals. So very effective treatment in this patient population. This was a study at 18 premium oncology centers within the U.S., including Levine Cancer Institute, where I was the principal investigator, along with University of Pittsburgh, University of Chicago, Medical College of Wisconsin, Johns Hopkins, and a few other institutions. And so this was a very, very effective form of treatment, which then ultimately led to the FDA approval, which came through later last month.
When will this treatment be available, or is it now?
This treatment is actually already available, because prior to this, there was another study, which also we participated in years ago, which had led to approval for liso-cel in later lines of therapy, meaning patients would have gone through a few rounds of treatment, first line, second line, and then would be eligible to get liso-cel down the road. So that was the Transcend study, which had had led to the FDA approval in the past. And so, the product is already available. And then this approval is basically moving an effective treatment from later lines of therapy to earlier so that more patients can benefit having received the treatment earlier than having to wait, after going through a number of treatments.
It's amazing. I know what Claire was saying, talk to us in kindergarten terms. So I'm just trying to imagine how it attacks the cancer cell and how it kills the cell. Very basic for our listeners.
Yeah. So what it does is, if you think of white blood cells in our immune system, these are type of immune cells, which a subset of these cells are called T lymphocytes. And these T lymphocytes have ability to detect and kill, any cells which have abnormalities. So for example, cancer. Unfortunately, sometimes, and I would say many times, cancers find a way to evade the immune system. So you have to almost reprogram the T lymphocytes to first detect the cancer and then to kill it. So basically what you're taking is patient's own T cells and genetically modifying them so that they can now detect the cancer cells. The cancer cells have something called a marker. Think of a marker on the cells called CD19. And what you're introducing into the immune cells is a receptor for the CD19. So now it can latch onto those CD19 on the cancer cells. And once that interaction occurs, they release certain things which can then go and just zap the cancer cell. So that's sort of the way, by which you can bypass this mechanism where the cancer cell is almost invisible to the immune cells and make it visible, get it close to the cancer cell, then directly kill it.
When you think about that, and again, I have very little medical background. Chemotherapy, radiation, all that is not needed. All the side effects is not needed. Are there any side effects of this procedure?
Yeah, so, there are side effects. When the immune system is revved up to fight against the cancer, then it can release something called cytokines, and these are things when someone gets sick with an infection or so. You can get fever, body aches. And that can get to even more severe side effects. So those side effects can be anticipated, and they were seen. However, the mortality from these side effects is extremely low. Fortunately, what clinical trials has taught us is that how to detect side effects early, how to intervene early, and then avoid badness from the side effects, right? So if, fever is not very uncommon, headaches can also occur, but there are two sets of these side effects, one called cytokine release syndrome and neurological symptoms. Both can occur, but typically they are not long lasting. And if detected early and intervened early, they don't land up having any severe side effects. Other side effects like low blood counts can also occur with this type of treatment. But then, that usually will get better over time. And we can support our patients and protect them from infections during the low blood counts. And it's a very different type of treatment compared to what you mentioned as chemotherapy and radiation, which has traditionally been there. And it still is there. For lymphomas and other cancers, but this is a newer form of treatment, more targeted straight to the tumor rather than having very general effects as chemotherapy does.
Absolutely, that's just wonderful news. And a little fever here, aches or pains compared to the spreading of those cancer cells, I'll take that any day. I really have no other comments. I think it's wonderful news. And maybe for folks that have just joined us or missed the beginning of this, doctor, one more time, explain what happens with this therapy.
So with this therapy, the patient's own immune cells are collected, called T lymphocytes. And these immune cells are then genetically engineered to express something called CAR, or chimeric receptor, chimeric antigen receptor, so that they can detect. And then these are genetically modified so that they can now detect cancer cells like lymphoma cells and attack them and kill them. This treatment can lead to a high complete response rate, and complete responses are durable. There are side effects which can be seen, like cytokine release syndrome and neurologic toxicity, which are mostly not very high in intensity, but can be recognized. If these are recognized early and intervened, they usually don't land up leading to serious side effects down the road. And so therefore, this is a very important advancement in the field of lymphoma.
Claire, are there any other questions?
My one question, just to help put this in perspective for people who live locally, Dr. Ghosh, it's really exciting to hear about research that's happening right here in our own backyard. People don't have to travel across the country to get this type of advanced level of cancer care. Can you talk about the importance of having great care close to home and why you and your team invest so much of your time and energy into doing research here in this area?
That's a great question, Claire. One of the biggest things is that we at Levine Cancer Institute have been able to be at the cutting edge of cancer treatments for many years now, and this therapy is just one example of that. Years ago, when it was just in clinical trials, we participated in it, and we got a lot of referrals from many states around North Carolina. This allowed patients to get early access to this very promising therapy. And then later on, when this treatment became FDA approved, we were one of the first sites to get have this available at Levine Cancer Institute. And then, we have continued that trend. So when this clinical trial, the pilot study came up several years ago, we participated again. And patients, therefore, who lived in the area or regionally, they didn't have to go far and they could get it here. And then as it becomes commercial, we have it available as well. So this is a huge resource, as we know that we are in a relatively large metro so patients can get their treatments closer to home. This is just one example of many, because we have other novel treatments, other immunotherapy in not just in lymphoma, but in many other cancers. But just in, with CAR T cell therapy, we have already given 100 CAR T cell therapies so far. And for transplants, we have already, done over 1,000 transplants. That just speaks to, us taking care of our patients in our area, and hope, we can keep doing better for them.
It's wonderful, wonderful, doctor. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
We'll enjoy the good news.
Okay, great. I hope our patients keep doing better.
Thank you for the work you've done.
Thank you for having me.
Just truly amazing. The advancements in cancer research and tools to fight that horrible disease. All right, coming up next, let's have a little fun. How about Original Chicken and Ribs, the oldest black-owned restaurant here in Charlotte? How many of you know about this place? Mark Garrison caught up with the owner. This is an example of a segment aired earlier this week, right here on Carolina Focus.
During the week of the 4th, how about a restaurant that probably you've never tried, but it's one of Charlotte's oldest?
So we found you on Google.
What are you going to order?
We don't know yet. Probably a lot of everything. What should we get? What do you recommend?
That guy is from Phoenix, Arizona, passing through Charlotte on business. And when he Googled chicken and ribs, he ended up here at a not-so-well-known spot on Beatty's Ford Road called Original Chicken and Ribs.
Close to where we're going, so we decided to stop in. Check it out.
And here in the parking lot of his Google destination, he just happened...
This is the owner.
Oh, you're the owner?
Yes, sir.
...to run into the owner, Jermaine Blackman.
What do you recommend?
I recommend the chicken, the whole wing chickens. My favorite is dark meat chicken, but if you want barbecue, the barbecue is good.
But then a passerby in the parking lot decided to chime in his suggestion for the out-of-towners.
Six-piece wing basket, fries, hush puppies, or coleslaw.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So here we have a white couple 2,090 miles from home at a little black-owned takeout joint in Charlotte that many locals have never heard of. all thanks to Google.
They Googled you.
That must make you feel good.
It does. It does. It does.
French fries and okra?
But when Jermaine Blackman's grandfather put his life savings into this little place and opened original chicken and ribs,
anything else for you?
He didn't really expect he would serve travelers. It was 1952. The song Night Train playing on jukeboxes and diners. But those were the days of segregation. And the only way travelers could learn about this little chicken and rib joint in West Charlotte was to read about it in something called the Negro Motorist Green Book.
You know, if anybody knows anything about the Green Book, it's an African-American travel guide to the Jim Crow era.
The Green Book was, in fact, the Bible for black families who took road trips, guiding them to safe places where they could eat and sleep.
We are one of the only places that's in the Green Book that's still in existence. That's in Charlotte, owned by the same family in the same place, in the same area, same address and everything.
It's true, not much has changed here since 1952. Jermaine Blackman loves telling the story of his grandfather starting this little place.
Granddad was just ambitious, came from Lancaster, South Carolina.
A man with dreams, undeterred by segregation.
They came here just come to the big city to make a better living, to make a better life.
So in this little building on Beatty's Fort Road, which has been remodeled a time or two since 1952, the family first started with ice cream, then started selling food.
French fries and okra, collard greens and what
else? No roll hush puppies.
A lot of people get confused that think that we're a barbecue place, and we're really not. My grandfather called it chicken and ribs, because that's what he sold. It's not a barbecue place. We do sell barbecue. We do sell ribs, but it's not like a smoked barbecue place. But our most popular is fried chicken.
Oh, yeah, the fried chicken flies out of here, especially fried wings.
Those are the wings.
Yes. They're just seasoning them up, and they'll fry them up. It's no trick to it.
Maybe no trick to it, but years worth of practice and know-how. And everything here is served to go. It's always been that way. It's not just a COVID thing.
That'll be $23.97.
And there is something else you need to know.
We cook everything to order. That's what makes us different.
He's not kidding. In fact, when you order, they tell you, don't be in a hurry. This will take a few minutes.
Hold on to this receipt and come back in about 25 minutes because everything's made to order.
Okay. You wait for chicken from 15 minutes to 25, just depending on how busy we are. We cook every item to order.
Your food here will never be cold.
Four wings and a fat boy burger.
Something Jermaine's grandfather insisted on.
What do you think your grandfather would say that you're keeping it going?
Oh, man, he'd be proud. Yeah, yeah.
Jermaine Blackman grew up working here alongside his mom and dad, who inherited the business. He left for a while to drive a truck, but just had to come back.
It's a lot of pride and satisfaction in, to carry on your family name.
And a lot of pride in serving up old family recipes, like what's coming out of the oven.
Fresh macaroni and cheese.
The mac and cheese was prepared by Jermaine Blackman's cousin, Edward.
Just putting a smile on the customer's face. That's what I do.
He put a smile on my face.
This may be some of the best mac and cheese I've ever put in my mouth.
Yeah, and the mac and cheese is good. It's, like I say, it's on four our sides. That's our number one seller. Besides French fries.
Also really good here, the collard greens.
We cut the collard greens fresh.
And normally, I'm not a fan.
Whoa, these greens are unbelievable. They are sweet.
Yeah, that's my mama, yeah.
His mom, who still helps out here occasionally, is a big believer in sugar.
The sugar takes the bite out of it.
But a lot of customers here not into the veggies. They like
the burgers. They homemade. The Fat Boy Special, that's my thing.
The Fat Boy Special is huge.
It's a fresh ground beef with lettuce, tomato, ketchup, mustard, chili, slaw, and cheese.
Fat Boy Burger.
Cousin Edward says he hand patties each burger for the Fat Boy.
Make those here. They're 4-ounce patties.
And as he worked the grill, Edward made a point to tell me they're not just serving up burgers and wings and ribs here. They're giving people a taste of history.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man. It's an honor.
Family history.
To be a part of something so great that's been around for so long in this community. Come to work every day with a smile on my face, looking forward to serving the customers, man. Yeah, yeah.
Anything else for you?
Original chicken and ribs has been a fixture for 70 years now on Beatty's Ford Road. A constant through good times and bad. in a neighborhood where much of the news is about crime and poverty. But the Blackman family is thrilled to be here, still serving their neighbors.
It's still gratifying to be able to be successful, have a following, and the community still loves you and supports you.
Jermaine Blackman says he'll keep this place going. His teenage son, he says, will likely take it over someday. But like his grandfather, Jermaine plans to work a long time.
I think I can work for another 35 years, hopefully.
How old are you?
I'm 50. Yeah, I want to work until I'm at least 85, being honest.
You do?
Yes, I do. Boy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what am I going to do? If I stop working, what am I going to do?
Work till he's 85? Well, that explains the family motto that I spotted on a sign in the kitchen.
Success is a ladder. It cannot be climbed with your hands in your pocket.
What does that mean?
Get your hands out of your pocket and get to work.
And with that, Jermaine Blackman got busy again in the kitchen. But before leaving Original Chicken and Ribs, I decided I'd check on that couple from Phoenix sitting at a picnic table outside.
So what do you think?
The Fat Boy Burger. Really good. Mm-hmm.
They found this historic black diner on Google. No idea it was 70 years old. No idea they were in a neighborhood that many in Charlotte sadly avoid.
Fat Boy Burger is fantastic.
What they do know is
it's all made to order, so it's all fresh.
It was one great meal.
Yeah, aside from burning my fingers right now.
Chicken is good.
The chicken's fantastic. Yeah, for real.
It is. Original Chicken and Ribs is on Beatty's Ford Road, open 11 to 8, Tuesday through Sunday. And as we mentioned, don't get in a hurry when you go because everything is made to order. Hey, we have to close this show out. I had to have Sharon's comments. You know, she's our Carolina Panther insider. Baker Mayfield coming to the Panthers. That's a win for everybody, Sharon.
Well, maybe everybody except Sam Darnold, who, of course, is going to be probably out of a starting job at this point. If you listen to most of the pundits around her, if nothing else, he's certainly going to have to fight tooth and nail to keep that starting job when you got a Baker Mayfield coming. I mean, yeah, this is a great situation in the fact that it costs the Panthers very little money. They're only having to pay him $4.85 million of his salary this year. They only had to give up a conditional fifth-round draft pick from 2024. It could go to a fourth-round pick, depending on how much Baker plays this season. So, I mean, they're not giving up a lot of money, not giving up a lot of draft capital, and you're getting a guy who won the Heisman Trophy and has taken his team to the playoffs, so which is more than can be said for Sam Darnold, so or anybody else on this roster at this point in terms of quarterback play. So it seems like it will be a good fit. You're getting him in here in time to get into training camp. I'm sure they would like to have him through the mini camp and some of the OTAs, but there was just too much back and forth trying to get the salary worked out with the Browns. So you get him in here in plenty of time to learn the playbook now before they even get to training camp and, let him take off and running. And it certainly seems like it's a good situation for this Panthers offense.
You know, we said this about Darnold, and now we have a different coaching staff, or let's say an enhanced coaching staff. Hopefully he gets the right direction, the right coaching, the right, let's keep your mind on the game on the field versus, other thing of doing State Farm commercials,
Yeah, he definitely has had lots of advertising opportunities, but he's looking for a fresh start. Obviously, he's kicked off, if nothing else, at the Browns with that whole situation up there, which would makes for a very interesting week one home opener here against the Browns when the Panthers open the season. So that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. But it's a fresh start. That's great for a lot of guys. Now he's got a leg up on Sam Darnold from a year ago because we've got a much better offensive line in place.
Right.
And hopefully a healthy Christian McCaffrey and everything else to go along with it. So it should be a good situation for him to come in and get a fresh start and prove that he's that, number one overall draft pick that he was a few years back and a Heisman Trophy winner and a guy who can get you to the playoffs.
Just the more you talk about it, the more I get excited. At first I wasn't, but hey, Sharon, thanks for the update and the feedback. Hey, by the way, great interview with Mike Hill. I thought that was excellent. They're doing a lot of good things up there at Charlotte 49ers.
Oh, I tell you what, since Mike Hill came on board here in Charlotte, he has done nothing but push this university, their athletic department, just up. So, that's a great move for them with the new conference and adding sports. I mean, they're just doing some great things over there. So, really exciting time to be a Niner.
Sharon, have a good one. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ed.